The Institute of Child Nutrition is proud to present our podcast, iBites. Here you will learn about all aspects of child nutrition programs, from research to resources, from oral histories to best practices. Each iBites episode features a wealth of information to help promote the continuous improvement of child nutrition programs. I'm Dr. LaWanda Morse, the Associate Director of Grants, and I will be your host. Hello and welcome to another episode of iBites. We're so glad that you joined us. Today we're going to talk about CACFP, which is another child nutrition program. And we've got a special guest here, Ms. Lutina Cochran. Hey, Lutina.
Hi.
She is an education and training specialist here at ICN, and she's going to share with us all of the intricacies of the program and tell us exactly what it covers. She is one of the specialists who specialized, don't you like that? Specialized in the specific program. We actually have two ET specialists on staff, Lutina and Deborah Winans, who are our CACFP specialists. So, Lutina, I'm going to turn it over to you. If you'll just begin by telling us a little bit about what the program is and what does it stand for?
Absolutely. So the CACFP stands for the Child and Adult Care Food Program. It's a federal child nutrition program in which it is regulated by the United States Department of Agriculture, Food and Nutrition Services Division. And this particular program is designed to provide nutritious meals and snacks to those attending child care, adult daycare, at-risk after school, emergency shelters, and family child care homes. The USDA, they regulate the program, and in return, state agencies amongst each state administer the program and work with those individuals that, you know, operate the program.
I know with child nutrition, the state agency that oversees that can vary. Is it the same for CACFP?
It varies. Primarily, it's the educational agency. But in some states, it is operated by Health and Human Services or some other agency of that particular form.
So with them having to answer to not only the state agency, but another group as well. Who is ultimately the one responsible for their regulations?
The federal regulations are the baseline regulations.
Okay.
So states can come in and add additional regulations, you know, that's conducive to the needs of that state. And so you have to meet technically both. And
got
so
it.
Ideally, you're looking at it from the perspective of, again, the federal, these are your baseline, these are the absolute, that covers all states.
Okay.
And so, again, state agencies, they come in and they identify those additional regulations that, again, would best meet their needs and implement those. So you have to abide by those that align in your state. And then by doing that, you meet both.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see easily how the need for making things more consistent is very important.
Absolutely.
If they have that ability.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, USDA and the state agencies have been, you know, working very well together in regards to making sure that everyone is in the loop and just outside looking in. Let me say that much, because I'm definitely we're an educational institution. So outside looking in, it's definitely been a need and a push to make sure everyone is on the same page and make sure that state agencies are set up for success, and in return, they can ensure that the operators are successful as well.
Having sat in on some of our trainings that we've conducted, we serve as a good resource because we are national. We're able to see and talk about what's occurring nationally and helping to make everything a little bit more similar.
Absolutely. I mean, we're fortunate because we are in place to help, you know, operators be successful. And so we have that ability to go out and answer questions. And even through our help desk, we have that access to, or individuals have access to us to answer those questions. And it does give us a national sense of what are some of the needs and what are some of the trends. And we're able to share those with state agencies and also USDA to make sure that we're all in aligned together and we're all successful. Here lately, it's been very beneficial to me to see what we are doing today, and then that in return will help us to help even more in the future. And so that's definitely been a eye-opener for me, for
Absolutely.
Lack of better words.
I know that one of the major updates came with the meal pattern. Can you tell us a little bit about that change and what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you all out in this podcast world may know, CACFP has been around since the 1968. And so when it was first put into place, the health needs of this country were significantly different than what they are today. Back then, there were deficiencies in nutrients such as vitamin A, vitamin C, and so forth. Fast forward, that is not the need for today. That is not the overall challenge associated with the overall population in this country. And so what you see today is more chronic diseases such as hypertension and type 2 diabetes. Now, because of that, that called for USDA to, you know, look at what's going on. In particular, the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010 said that, you know, challenged USDA to identify what's going on and then review and revise the meal patterns to better provide nutritious meals in the facilities or in CACFP operated facilities. And so that's what happened. So in April of 2016, they released the regulations. Fast forward 1 year later, October 1, 2017, last year, the updated requirements went into effect. Today, as far as the infant meal pattern, one of the biggest changes was allowing mothers to come in and breastfeed in the facility and providing reimbursement for that. So as we all know, our breast milk is one of the most important and most necessary nutrients for healthy development during the first year of life. And so providing that change and allowing mothers to come in, now it provides, again, the health benefits to the infant, but also it increases the bonding between the mother. Absolutely. That was just one of the major changes. And then, you know, with children and adults.
Let me ask one quick question there.
Absolutely.
So I was a working mom when I had my girls, and I nursed both my children. I wasn't able to, I taught at the time.
Yeah.
So I was in the schools, and I couldn't leave work to go and breastfeed on site where my children were. So what options do those parents have who want to continue breastfeeding their children but can't leave and go to site to breastfeed?
And so that's one of the great things about the update is that express breast milk has always been allowed. It's been always been optional as part of a reimbursable meal. Allowing a mother to come in and breastfeed is just an added option.
That's great.
It just further says that, hey, you know, we understand the importance of breast milk, and so if you can't come, send the express milk, and if you would like to come, come on.
That's
and
great.
Also still allows for infant formula, because sometimes, you know, all mothers don't choose to breastfeed, and that's totally respected and understood, and so it still continues to allow for infant formula.
And it's iron fortified?
Iron fortified infant formula. And then I guess another thing with the infants is that it promotes more fruits and vegetables without the added sugar. One of the biggest things, again, that contributes to some of those chronic diseases is sugar, saturated fats. With the meal pattern changes, you know, one of the biggest aims is to reduce sugar and saturated fat. That particular push is seen throughout all of the meal patterns, including child, adult, and infants. Regarding children and adults, the same concept. You know, adding more whole fruits and vegetables, serving less juice. Juice is, you know, it's juice is juice.
Right.
But juice can be a source of added sugar. So reducing the juice and focusing on those whole fruits and vegetables, reducing the saturated fats and providing more whole grains. Just making sure that we're providing, or the operators are providing, children and adults the best possible meals to ensure, you know, health and wellness. When you really put this into perspective as far as the program itself, many of the kids and even some of the adults may not know where their next meal is coming from without this program. Put it into perspective, 1 out of 6 kids don't know where their next meal is going to come from every single day.
That is a startling fact.
Yeah, very much so. But this program helps to ensure that so many children and so many chronically impaired, disabled adults, you know, receive nutritious meals and snacks while in, you know, a CACFP operated site. The changes or the updates to the program just takes it to a whole nother level where they are receiving nutritious meals and snacks, but now, you know, we're taking it to the next level of expanding on that quality. And food insecurity is major. To think about not knowing where your next meal is going to come from, it's major. I know for myself, not to make this personal, but I start to get a headache if I don't eat by a certain hour.
Right.
So I can only imagine what it's like for an individual who really doesn't know, you know, and who really goes home, or who, when they think about food, like, they can't fathom where that's going to come from. And not only does food insecurities affect, you know, your health, but it also affects your brain. And there's quite a bit of information and research out there of how it affects truancy, how it affects your ability to succeed academically in school,
right,
and just a number of things. And so just thinking about the benefits of the program itself and how many children receive nutritious meals and snacks, I think sometimes we take it for granted because
sure,
we know, but to know that some people don't know, and then all that this program does makes me want to scream and go around to every child care or every adult care facility and say, get on the program.
Right, sure.
So, you know, when we go out to conferences, especially those that may not necessarily be driven by CAZFP, and I meet people and I ask, first question, are you on the program, or do you know anything about the program? And I wait for the answer, no. Oh, my goodness, that's like opportunity,
right,
to just go crazy on them. I'm sure they think, like, wow, this lady is screaming CACFP at me. And the reason why, of course, is because I know the benefits. While this program only serves 4 million children, there are a total 13 million children in this country, if my facts are correct, and I think they are. But, again, it's a great opportunity to just meet the need and fill the gap or decrease the food insecurities that children face today.
I think it's also important to mention that there's a, I don't know if you want to say a flip side to that, but mm-hmm, if let's say we have a facility that is in the CACFP, mm-hmm, if they have children who are in that facility that don't experience a food insecurity and their parents are able to provide great meals when they're home, because that facility participates, that child is still eligible to get those great meals while they're there as well.
Absolutely. So very similar to schools, you have to complete an income eligibility form. And so that will determine if for those particular facilities that are operating the
okay,
program. And so that will determine if you would qualify for free or reduced lunch. And so in the case if you don't qualify, that basically means that doesn't say, oh, you can't have the nutritious meal. Like, we're not going to turn you away. That just means that, hey, the center or home or et cetera won't receive the same amount of a reimbursement that they would receive if the child or if the parent qualify for free or reduced. And so, but again, it's still, you're still benefiting if you are attending a facility that operates the program. Not only from the nutritional aspect, but the operator themselves, they are, you know, provided with training, they are providing with additional technical assistance measures to ensure that they are, you know, meeting not only the nutrition aspect, but the food safety aspect and things of that nature.
I think for people who may be new to CACFP, mm-hmm, or aren't as familiar with the components or the regulations, it could be a very scary thing. Tell us a little bit about what the Institute can do to help them. What
Absolutely.
Resources do we have available?
Sure. So over the last year and a half, I think, maybe 2 years, let's go say 2 years, we have been working closely with USDA to develop training materials to align with and meet the meal pattern regulations. And so since then, we've developed 1 8-hour training. We have 3 supplemental trainings, as well as 3 online courses. Those are just some of the things that we have as far as trainings and online courses go. We're also going through a CACFP resource overhaul, review, and revise process. That's such a long name that I just created. But we are going through all of our resources right now and looking at what needs to be reviewed, what should be revised, and taking care of that to make sure that the resources that we're offering are up to date, accurate, and align with the needs. So a couple ways you can find those resources. First, you can always go to our website, which is theicn.org. For those specifically on the meal pattern, you can go to theicn.org/CACFPMP. So let me say that once once again. It's
a little bit slower, maybe, for those that are trying to write it down.
Sure. theicn.org/CACFPMP, which the MP stands for male pattern. And so you can go to that particular webpage and you can find the trainings and our online courses, even some of the latest policy memos and so forth. Now, if you should go there and you can't find what you need, please know that we sometimes have to pull down our resources to revise them to reflect the latest policy memos. And so if they're not there, then definitely feel free to give us a call. And our number is 1-800-321-3054 and request to speak with someone that covers CACFP male pattern, and we can definitely assist you and just give you an update as to where those resources are and the status of those.
So with the help desk, they can either call in, and you've already provided our 800 number, or then we also have a help desk email.
Absolutely. It's helpdesk@theicn.org.
And when those emails come in, if I have a question about CACFP, how is that handled?
Sure. So it is routed between myself or Deborah. And so as LaWanda previously mentioned, Deborah and I are specialists who specialize.
I got to find a better word for that.
Absolutely. And the mail pattern. And so what takes place is we aim to return all emails within 48 hours. Sometimes it may take a little longer because we have to go and research. And
sure.
So ultimately with that, we go and find the answer and we follow up with the response, and then we always aim to provide you with a state agency contact as well, so that if you have additional questions that may be truly regulatory related, then we want to make sure that you have the best contact for any further questions.
That's very helpful. Yeah. Now if I call, do I get one of you, or how
Absolutely.
Does that work?
Absolutely. Unless we're out, you know, attending a conference or something along those lines, yes, you will. If you call us, you can reach us by phone. And so same thing applies. You know, we listen to any questions, and in many cases, we can answer them right away. Mm-hmm. But in some cases, we do have to go out and do some research to get you the best response. And so we encourage calls and emails. We want to make sure that we're providing you with the skills and the information to be successful. And so if this help desk can be useful, definitely take advantage of it.
That's a great resource to know that they have access to.
Absolutely. And definitely take advantage of the resources. I mean, it's really it's a great resource because, I mean, as a previous director in the field, I didn't know about ICN's help desk. And so sometimes it was quite interesting, but definitely take advantage of it if that's a need that you have for us.
And I've mentioned this on previous podcasts, but we haven't said it today. And all of this is available for free.
Absolutely.
Let's say that again.
Free.
Absolutely.
All of our resources, our trainings, our help desk services, our online courses, everything that we have available is for free and easy download, with the exception of our online courses and help desk. So again, if you're on the program, you're on any of the child nutrition programs, definitely take advantage of this resource, of our resources that we have available. As far as training, too, we provide free training. And so I mentioned previously that we have 1 8-hour training and 3 supplemental trainings. So if that's something of your interest, definitely take advantage of that as well. And we have an awesome training team who takes those requests and they work with you to meet the needs. And so definitely take advantage of that.
Lisa Rogers, who is our assistant director over training, was one of my guests, I believe it was last month, mm-hmm. and we talked about the process that you go through to get training. So if you're interested and you're not familiar with the process, go back and listen to podcast 2.
Absolutely. It's waiting for you.
That's right. It's waiting for you.
And then the great thing about, you know, our trainings, we have regional-based trainings, and we cover the entire country, including the American territories. And so I like to say that because I've gone as far as Alaska and then all the way over to Guam. So, again, take advantage of this resource. And if it's something that you're needing and we don't have it available, send us an email, give us a call, and if it's something that we can developed, then that's definitely something we will consider.
We also have a Facebook page, Instagram, a wealth of ways that you can reach out to us, and would love for you to interact with us. I hope you'll tune in next month for more iBites, but until then, remember, there's nothing more important than the health and well-being of our nation's children. This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitten Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-50-9410, or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.